About this time, their producer, George Martin, described his responsibilities in the recording.
My main role was that of tidying up the basic unit of three guitars and drums and the occasional keyboard. And in fact, in those days, if there was a keyboard used, it was generally me who played it, whereas later on, John and Paul did much more. So that in the early days, then, as I've described in Can't Buy Me Love, I would just sort of do a little bit of manipulation to get a slightly more concise arrangement.
Capitol of Canada released their version of With the Beatles 3 days later under the name Beatlemania with the Beatles. The Beatles were already enjoying good sales and airplay in Canada, especially after the success of She Loves You. But it was a different story in America. Two smaller companies, VJ and Swan, were releasing the material without generating much interest, although that was soon to change. Producer George Martin could not understand why Capitol Records, EMI's American counterpart, would not release the Beatles' records.
I got increasingly frustrated because our American counterparts in Capitol had always been slightly superior, saying, well, of course, you don't really know in England about rock and roll. I mean, we are the fountainhead of rock and roll, and we should know about it. And every time a record was rejected by them, I said to myself, well, I guess they must be right, you know. And then with the second one, well, are they right? And by the third time, I know damn well they're not right. You know, I got increasingly hard about it. In some of the stations in America, the Beatle records issued on the Swan and VJ labels and so on were getting more and more prominent. And I guess the Capitol people were getting cold feet by this time. They were aware they'd turned it down three times. And I guess they said, well, you know, maybe we ought to try this. And then, of course, by the time the I Want You Want to Hold Your Hand came along, they realized they had to get behind it. And that was it was like a dam bursting. The pressure was too great. And that really what's contributed to the enormous success of the Beatles in America, with men wearing silly Beatle wigs in Fifth Avenue and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
In November, Brian flies to New York to arrange the release of their new single on Capitol Records. While in New York, he meets with Ed Sullivan to have the Beatles make two appearances on his show. Ed Sullivan was already aware of the Beatles' success.
For years, we've visited London. So on one of our arrivals in late 1963 at London Airport, when Mrs. Sullivan and I saw hundreds and hundreds of youngsters, I asked what celebrity was arriving. And they told us the teenagers were awaiting the Beatles. Always on the lookout for talent, I decided the Beatles would be a good TV attraction for our show. So I contacted Brian Epstein, their manager, and we agreed on $10,000 for three shows, plus five round-trip plane tickets, plus their expenses for room and board in New York City.
One of the first to notice the Beatles in America was a Columbia University night student named Sid Bernstein. He had been reading of the riots the Beatles inspired as reported in the British pop papers. He thought there must be something in it and felt they would go over in America as well. So he contacted Brian Epstein in London and arranged for the first Beatle appearance in America.
I started to read some things about the Beatles and Beatlemania long before I'd even heard a record of theirs or even read much in our trade press. And I decided that if Beatlemania had touched England, it was inevitable that it would touch our shores. And so I did 3 weeks of exploratory work and found this young man that I'd been reading about, who was their manager, found Brian Epstein's home number. And I got him at home. And this was the summer of 63.
The date was set for February 12th, and the place, Carnegie Hall. Meanwhile, back in Britain, on November 29th, 1963, Parlophone released their next Beatles single, just 7 days after the last album. It was called I Wanna Hold Your Hand, and was written in the basement of Jane Asher's parents' house on Wimpole Street. It was another attempt at doing a mock American gospel song in the hope that it would break into the American charts. It finally did, reaching number one on February 1st, 1964. In Britain, the song had advance orders of 1 million copies.